Welcome to Trapping Across America, where fur brothers meet every week. Where we're still allowed to be men, and we're proud to be from the land of the fur and the home of the brave. This is your host, Clint Locklear, from Trapping Across America. We've got a very good show this week. Our main interview this week is going to be talking with Charlie out of California, and he's going to be talking about cage trapping cats. Now, if you're thinking, well, I don't use cages, there's some information you're going to find in here, at least to me, was pretty groundbreaking, and it just goes to prove the point. When trappers pay attention to what it is that they're doing and really watch what's going on and start using their head a little bit, they can always come up with something that's a little bit better. And even though if you're not going to use cages, which I don't know why anybody wouldn't, after the more research I've done into this, some of the aspects of that would make a foothold trapper even that much better, to be honest with you. And Charlie does a good job, some good history in his family that I think everybody's going to enjoy. Now, finally, my season got started. I go take the boat down to the Tennessee River, and I head up small creek called Battle Creek, and I'm setting muskrat traps on it, and sign's not that thick. To be honest with y'all, my wife says when I go to Battle Creek for muskrats, I do this every year for about a week, and it seems like it's my penance, and that's not really what it is, but what I go there for, there's not a lot of muskrats there. The water's fluctuating up and down a couple of feet every single night, and it's tough trapping. It's not like when I go up to the lakes where it's more stable to catch muskrats. This is a hard place to catch them. And I've tried every conceivable way of floats and using logs and trying to set holes and colony traps and conibears and footholes and lure and the whole nine yards. And it's something I go every year. And the reason that I go back and I keep doing it, for one, I'm absolutely dead determined that I'm going to figure out how to catch these rats on Battle Creek, because they seem to me, after about 3 days of being out there, they're the smartest freaking rats in the world, because they always seem to be smarter than me. Sure, I catch some, but it's not near what at least I believe is there. And pretty much this week for me, that means I'm getting my butt kicked. Now, the first day I took the river out, or the boat out on the river, the river welcomed me with about 40 mile an hour gust. So we had white caps on the Tennessee River. And when I started early in the morning, the wind hadn't picked up. By the time I could get back to Battle Creek to get out of the wind, white capping, pretty big waves, slamming the boat around pretty good. And then you throw the barge traffic and the waves that they're throwing out. And it was pretty hair raising there for about 45 minutes so I could get back into some cover on Battle Creek. So the river welcomed me pretty well on that. Then I go setting traps. Everybody that wanted to go fishing that day was in Battle Creek, so I'm trying to hide from them and do everything. And then the rains came. Well, I'll go back to check my traps, catch a few muskrats, catch some coons and snares up on the high banks, stuff like that. I'm having a good old time, and it starts raining. That's normal. Put on the rain gear, go out that. Next day, I come back, and the water's about 3 foot above where it is. And I'm trying to find most of my traps. And I do this all the time. Now, if you've ever been around mountains and you have rain, all that water is going to come off the top and it's going to end up in the bottom. But as long as the current in the bigger creeks, like Battle Creek, is flowing downstream, it means it's not backing up. And you're normally okay. You're not going to get a massive flood. So I took a chance. I set a bunch more floats because that's really all I could do. And we've had about 4 or 5 inches of rain yesterday, and I took the boat down there. There's no way in this world I'm putting my boat in that river today. There's just no way. It's about 8 foot higher, 6 to 8 feet higher, and it is rolling. And in a 25 horsepower motor and a 16 foot jumbo boat, you're not getting this fat boy on that for no way, no how. I can tell you that. So that's what I've been doing this week, pretty much getting my butt kicked between Mother Nature and the wily muskrats on Battle Creek, like I seem to fight every year. But that's trapping, and I enjoy it. And what it does to me when I go to Battle Creek, it clicks my brain into hyperdrive on trying to fix a problem. And one of these days, I'm going to figure that out, and I'll be on cloud nine when I do figure that creek out, because it's got to open up some secrets sooner or later if I keep trying new things. And it's always a learning experience to me dealing with the water fluctuations and the style of creek it is, because there's holes everywhere. There are some beaver there to deal with. There are some coons and stuff to deal with. There's a few mink on there. But dealing with that water is just always a tough situation. But that's just trapping. That's if you want to get good, you got to go trap where it's hard sometime. And I do that every year, kind of like paying my dues or trying to get my brain working that way and working out problems. So that's what I've been doing. Now, before we get to the interview with Charlie, I'm going to talk a little bit about the nature Nazis. Yesterday was Thanksgiving, and I've got a little bitty quote I wish everybody here would remember when you start dealing with these nut jobs. The PETA, Humane Society and Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, what a joke they are. Also, what they're trying to do is bring doom and gloom, I believe, to Thanksgiving. They don't want anybody eating meat. All they want you eating is bean sprouts and beans and salads and asparagus. And I mean, all that's fine. I like all that. But I want some meat every now and then. And they're trying, mostly through our kids and through peer pressure and through advertisement and all that, to stop us from eating meat. Now, what their plan is this year is they're handing out tofurkey. Well, I don't know how you really say it, but it's T-O-F, which tofu, T-O-F-U, tofurkey. Okay, we'll go with that. It's turkey made out of tofu. No, thank you. Not in any stretch of the imagination is that ever going to reach my tongue. And that's what they're trying to do. Now, how are they going about this? This is where I find, I mean, these people are like little communists. You know, when you go off the Communist Manifesto, one of the first things you read on there is they get control of the children. So what are they doing? They've got a little magazine. You might want to check at your local schools on this. It's called the Kind News, like being kind to animals, Kind News magazine. And what they're doing is they're going into grade schools, and they're using this little magazine with these little lessons, and it's pretty soft, but it's very misleading information, and it's based on getting kids to want to be vegetarians and vegans, where they don't eat meat, where they're not being cruel to the animals and stuff like that. Now, if you've got kids and you find out that they're teaching this in your school, I'd be standing on top of the principal's desk with a Louisville Slugger wanting to know what in the hell's going on with my children. Because unless you're promoting that yourself, they don't have a right to be trying to warp your kid's mind into being a vegetarian. Now, my note to people that want to eat tofu turkey for Thanksgiving, my food, the food that I eat, the food that most of us trappers eat, deer, real turkey, cows, me, beaver, elk, everything that we eat that we really like, chicken, pork, God's, you know, long live the pig as far as I'm concerned. One thing to remember in all this, and you need to keep this in the back of your mind, our food, the deer, the beef, the pigs, everything, craps on their food, which is the grass, the lettuce, and all that. So I'm always wanting to stay one little bit above the food chain, so I'm going to let them eat the crap that comes off of my food while they're sitting there eating the lettuce, because my food is above them on the food chain, and I know that's why it's a better place to be. So enough about that. I hope y'all had a good Thanksgiving yesterday. I hope you spent some time with your family and kind of got your battery recharged on the phone, the family networking and everything. But that's what I want to tell you about what they're trying to convince your kids to do is have tofu turkey, if you can believe that. I mean, Larry the Cable Guy couldn't even believe something like that. Well, we're going to go and we're going to get started with Charlie. I'm going to get him on and let him introduce himself. Okay, everybody, I've got Charlie Aston on the phone, and he's from California, right off the Nevada border is what he told me. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, Charlie?
Well, I've been a varmint trapper and hunter, hound hunter, for my entire life. I'm a three-generation hunter and trapper. I've been kicking calves for probably since the very early 90s, before the Trap Ban Initiative went into effect in California. And, you know, just kind of been obsessed with it ever since.
And you, we were talking before I started recording and everything, but you were saying that your whole family comes from trapping. I think that's pretty neat. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, my grandpa back in the fur boom, back in the early 70s when the prices jumped, he actually had an old school bus gutted out that he converted into living quarters and took it up, and that was his first shed in living quarters. And everything, and he trapped cat and fox in the foothills outside on the coastal region of California. And my dad did the same during the winter time when he'd be laid off from work and work would get slow. That's how he put food on the table, was through cat hides and fox hides. And I just kind of was raised up through that. And he also used hounds, trail hounds, to catch game and, you know, put fur on the stretchers.
Now, you still, you said you still hound cats. I read some stuff that you put on Wolfer Nation. Is, I'm never really got into that, just for the simple fact I've been bear hunting and hog hunting a lot. But what type of dogs are you using for cats?
Well, I've got a line of dogs that has been bred here in California. They're a cross between trig hounds. My dad brought out from, actually, Mount Home, Alabama. He bought some from David Johnson back in 1980. I believe it was 80.
Well, I knew they had to be something good if they're from the South.
Oh, yeah. Well, my whole family come from Russellville, Arkansas. They come out here to California back in the late 70s. Early 70s. I'm sorry. And, but anyway, my grandpa brought his dogs out with him, and we've been breeding them ever since. And I got some RP bred blue ticks that do pretty good on these cats out here. And I'm kind of not out of town hunting as much, but I had a guide service, and I used to take people out bear hunting and cat hunting. And with the economy the way it's collapsed a little bit, and my legs, my knees, I had 3 knee surgeries and a shoulder surgery. So I quit the bear hunting, and I'm just straight cat hunting now. But I stopped the guide service because cat pelts went up high. And it was easier for me to just sell the pelts than it was to guide, because I didn't have that monkey on my back. You know, having to guide somebody, I just go out and do my hunting without anybody.
Well, how old are you, Charlie?
I'm 38.
Well, what the reason, you know, I've seen a lot of your posts on Wolfer Nation, like I said, and I can tell you get after the cats pretty good, dogs and cages. And this topic, especially now, is really intriguing to me because I've never been around cage trappers. I bought my first cage traps this year to play with, and I've never done any cage trapping. I've never really considered it part of fur trapping, but after I went out to Arizona and went to their convention and I got to rub shoulders with those guys, I was totally fascinated how they're catching so many cats with half the equipment and in shorter time than what I would consider a better trap being a foothold. So that's kind of, you know, how did you get started in the cage traps?
Well, I initially started with my grandpa. He wanted us to train our hounds with having them on bobcat. So he built a trap. He designed about a half dozen traps, which were 2x2x4, and we set them and produced a few cats, and it just kind of went from there. That's what got me started. And since then, I've just kind of went on and kind of, you know, it went in. After that, it became a law here in California to use cage traps. So you kind of had to jump on the cage trapping, because we'd already been doing it for a couple of years prior to the law even going into effect. So I'm kind of just took it from there.
Are cats about all you really target in your cages?
I only set for cats. I do have, if there's a gray fox in the area, normally I'll clog the cages up prior to catching cats, because the way that gray fox work a cage, they normally commit pretty quick. And normally, a good cat set, a good cat location, good cat lure, normally it'll produce a gray fox just as fast. They won't shy away from a cat set.
Now, is the 2x2x4-foot-long cages, is that what you're using now, or have you went to the more narrow, taller type that I saw out in Arizona?
No, I'm using some of the old ones. I don't like them. I mean, I do like them because they catch fur. But right now, I just ordered and I got some, and I'm trying them out this year in some of the cam trip cages from Mercer Loring out of Barstow. And to me, he makes a fabulous cage. They're lightweight, they're frameless, they got a great trigger design, and I can't wait to use them.
Have you met him yet?
I've never met him. I talked to him, that's it.
Yeah, he seemed like a really, really great guy that really knew his cats and took a lot of pride in it.
So he's pretty good. He puts a lot of cats on board.
Oh,
tell
yeah.
you that.
That he does. His paycheck makes me pretty envious.
When you learn from the best, you know, Reed Ayton taught him, and Reed Ayton's kind of a legend in this state as far as cage trap.
Okay. Well, what are you looking for in a cage trap? What from someone that's been using them, what's going to turn you on about the features of a cage trap you're going to be looking at as far as bobcats go?
Well, I like a big pan. I like the guillotine doors because I could check them. They stand up a little bit to where I can get a sight off them without. A lot of times I could check them through binoculars. The big pan, I like the nesting. I like the four nests inside each other. And I like, to me, honestly, my favorite trap is the 8-inch wide trap. A lot of guys think that those 8-inch wide cat traps won't catch, but I can pretty much guarantee you they will.
Do you feel in that smaller trap that you can catch a true 25, 28-pound,
30-pound tom? Absolutely. I mean, when I steel trapped prior in California prior to the Trap Ban Initiative, and I would guide those cats down in a force set, and those cats would be guided down. Just how you do it in your cat collector video, they're guided down to just right over the jaw, pretty much an 8-inch, 6-inch net. They have no problem committing into those guys.
Well, that's true. I guess I'm thinking of a big body cat going into. But, you know, I've caught a lot of cats in the 220s for coons, and I kind of look out strange when they get caught.
And a cat, a lot of guys will think a three foot trap won't catch a cat, they'll back out, this and that. But every time a cat gets hit on the ass end with the trap door, he jumps forward. He's going to lunge. He's going to lunge forward, that door's going to drop. He's not going to back out like a coyote would.
Now, one of the things that intrigued me about the cat, where I live in Tennessee and a lot of places I go trapping, everybody's got 15 dogs, it seems like. No one ever puts them on a leash. So, Mercer at the convention was selling all these coon dogs that work in his cages that, you know, just were out running around. Most of those dogs would back out of the cage. Are you catching a lot of dogs in your cages, or do you feel that most of them can back out of yours too?
As far as the small cages?
Or any of them.
As far as catching title cages?
No, dogs. House dogs. Hunting dogs.
Oh, yeah. I honestly believe that an actual house dog, if you had a chucker dog or something, get into that set, he'd back out. I don't think the door would ever. I don't think you'd catch it.
Okay. What are you?
I've never caught a dog in my set. You know, I really don't believe that. I think the way the door would fall and they'd back out, they're just, you know, there's a build on them.
Okay. Well, why don't you take a minute and explain when you're setting your cage up, what is your procedure that you're using?
Well, first thing you do, I mean, you want your location. I check wind. wind direction, being a varmint caller and hunter, you know, you always want to check your wind. And I think the wind direction will, that lure, you know, let it drift into, make sure that that scent is where the wind's going to pull it into the cat's face pretty much. And then I'll dig me out of bed, flat spot, and I kind of let, I don't put anything inside the cage as far as bait and lure goes. What I do is underneath of the pan, right after the pan, I'll dig a little dirt hole, and I'll put my bait, my lure, right there, and then I will set the cage on top of it, and then I always put me like a little pack rat nest in the back of the cage. Sticks and grass with some down pellet feathers and polyseal. And then I'll usually use a couple of feathers on a swivel, so it'll give some motion and moving action. Well, I'll use a teddy bear with the stuffing pulled out, just with the eyeballs hanging there, little dangling, and that works well for me.
Now, when you say you're digging out a trap bed, are you like taking a mattock and making sure it's level with soft dirt? Are you staking your trap for stability or anything like that?
Well, what I do is I got this little kind of a garden hoe. It's got like a three-prong fangs on one side and then a flat side on the other, and I just kind of rake me out a flat spot, and I put it in there. And now I kind of cubby the, I make a back, I try and make the scent where I can just back it up to the brush, but I don't want a huge backing. To get those real big backings where there's a cat can't circle that cage, a lot of times you'll lose the cat. So what I'll do is, if I do get a set where it's a good location and the backing's too big, I'll bust down the branches and stuff, and I'll make a trail so where that cat can circle the cage and work that cage. But what I'll do is I usually get about a 2, 3, 4 foot backing with a little bit of sidewall so he can't, it's just one-way entrance. Because where foot, if he's walking that trail, he's going to see that cage, he's going to go in, and he's going to commit to that cage, and he can only see it one way. He can't come. I don't have him where he can sit there and go around the side and then the back of the cage and get a smell at that lure, bait, or whatever he's interested in. I want him to only be able to have everything pulling that gap to the back of the cage.
So from what you just said, which I thought was interesting, you're saying if the cat, if you've got a big backing, like where you're at, I'm sure it's sage or something.
It's sagebrush and bitterbrush.
If the cat gets away from the cage, he'll lose interest and go about his business. So you've got to let him keep eye contact on the cage. Is that what you meant?
Well, what I've noticed is if you get a real big backing, cats are, they're so easily distracted that he may be wanting to work your set, but he's going to go to circle it. If he can't get around it all the way pretty quick, he may get, if you get, you know, he has to go up the hill 15 foot. Side of a hill to get around your, you know, get a clear path back to your cage, he may just get distracted and just go on about his hunt and forget all about your cage sitting there.
Oh, okay.
So I try and make my best just to make it to where he can work that cage, just, you know, I'll be a trail down or whatever so he don't have to go very far so he don't lose interest in that set.
Okay, and as far as your bait and lure, are you going after curiosity, food, glands? What is it that you're looking for in a cat lure or bait that you're going to put down in your hole?
Well, my cat lure, I like a gland based lure. You want something that's going to give the cat a rub, a rolling action. You want something like that. So my favorite all time food based lure would have to be some type of a fish. Either be trout, some type of a trout paste, or every one of my fish is going to have a gland-based lure, and it's going to have some type of a fish-type food-based lure. Oh. And then I'm going to use urine, and I'm going to use, I use a lot of trail scents. I'll make my own oil, and I use my own trail oil, and I'll make a lot of times if my fit won't fit right on the exact spot I want it, I'll take a squirt bottle and I'll run maybe an oyster oil trail right up to the cage door. Just kind of give them a little trail scent. Because them cats, I 100% believe those cats are smelling their way into the cages. They're not. They're working those cages by their nose. A lot of, I mean, they do use their eyes a lot, and that means, but most of their, they're smelling their way into those cages. Every one of the trail camera footages I've ever seen and that I have got, a cat, when they get to that cage, they'll nose all the way around it with their head down. They'll eventually work their way in and commit.
I agree with you. I think a cat, I think people have really underestimated how much they smell. Just watching a house cat. I mean, everything he goes up to, he sticks his nose to.
Yeah. And this year, I'm working on some, and last year I did too, but I didn't get them until the tail end of the year, is them electronic baits. And they're just, their edge is producing one right now. And it just sounds like a little baby bird caught in grass. Just a little chirp. And I think that may help with the cat. I did catch some cats last year with it, but I didn't get enough time to give it a full, you know, review. I really don't know 100%. I'm still testing those.
Okay.
But I do, my main thing I've got, flagging is, to me, you got to get their attention in a big way, you know. And when you got their attention, you got to have the lure. And I like giving them a whole smorgasbord back there. You know, and I one thing I do in the back of my set, probably might be different than a lot of guys, is all my sets got pieces of carpet in them in the back, and I do that because that cat or that fox that's in that set, they're gonna poop, they're gonna pee, and it's gonna be all over that carpet. And just like your last show where when you talked about stinky dirt,
mm-hmm.
it's the same way. I want to collect all that pee, I want to collect all that poop, I want it on that carpet. I want that carpet smelling real catty. So when I do decide to move that set, I can take that smell right with me. Because that second catch, it's so much more appealing than that first one. You know, that second catch, when you get those cats, it seems like that after you've caught a cat in that cage, they work it a lot easier than they did the first time. Because all of that natural body odor that's in that set.
Well, using the carpet, that almost sounds genius to me. I've never heard anybody say that. I don't know if you come up with that or not, but that's using your noggin there.
Yeah, it's just a real thin outdoor carpet, and I just put a little bit of duff over it. And those cats, they get in there and they just pee all over it. And I mean, I keep the poop on it and everything else. You know, it's kind of nasty, but I'll tell you what, it's real catty smelling, and I just go with it. And it also, you know, it saves me from having to cover the ground of the floor of the setup too, because I mean I still sift it a little bit on the ground. I'll sift some dirt out on it. I don't have to do it as much with the carpet on there.
That makes sense to me. When you were talking about your flagging, are you hanging the flags like I do in the cat collector video just to get their attention to get to the cage?
Yes. I use a lot of different kinds. One of my favorites is a helium balloon. It's some kind of little, like this, jet whale balloons that float around.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tie one of those off to a tree if I can get away with it. I mean, I do predator control for a cattle ranch here that's about half the county, so I can do a lot of it behind locked gates. You know, but on public land, when you got $100 traps sitting out there, you know, you got to go a little bit more subtle. So, you know, but my favorite is those. I picked up some of these things a couple of years ago that I love, if I could figure out the batteries would last longer, but during the 4th of July, they flash this red and blue lights around, and that really works good. But feathers, just a feather on a swivel is one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
I depend a lot on that flag, because you got to get their attention.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question, and we're going to test your creativity with your language on this one. When you're looking for a cat location, what is it that you know that there's cats there, and what are, by describing some of your better cat locations, how could other people see that? You're in a little bit different terrain, but cats are cats, what I've learned all over the country. So what are you looking for where you're going to put this cage at?
I'm looking for rock ledges right against the base of the walls on the ledges, if you ever walk the edges of those ledges, you'll see that there's just mouse droppings just 2 inches thick most of the time. I set a lot on pack rat nests because in my country, I check every cat's stomach contents, and in my country over here, my cats, I guess 98% of them have nothing but pack rats in their stomach. But I really, and I got snow a lot of the time so I can track these cats, and they go from pack rat nest to pack rat nest. So I do focus a lot. If I see a big, huge pack rat nest, a lot of times I'll sit next to it. I like dry washes. I like creek beds. I like if you got an open flat sage with a big rock pile in the middle of that flat sage, a lot of times that big rock pile will stand out. Funnel points, choke points. It's the rock walls is one of my favorites. And dry washes, that's another one that stands out. Those cats, a lot of guys, you mean, they're always going to be tight to structure, always going to be next to something that they can get away from the coyotes on. So a lot of guys will, you can't think like a coyote trapper when you're set for those cats. You got to think like a cat. You got to, a cat's not going to commit 500 yards out into a wide open field like a coyote will. They're going to keep themselves hidden, tight to trees, and that's pretty much where I sit. I sit tight to structure.
Now, when you sit in your washes, are you sitting in the wash or are you sitting on the upper edge of the wash?
Well, how I do it is I sit down in the wash. I'll sit in the wash and then I'll flag and hope if they, and what I've noticed about a cat is they'll walk so close to the edge, it's almost looking like they're going to fall off. So what I'll do is, normally they're walking so tight to that edge, they'll hug that edge. They're going to be looking off the edge of that wash anyway, and I'll try to get their attention with the flag, but usually my trap will be down in the washes.
Okay, that makes sense. I know when I was trapping out in New Mexico, first time I went out west, I did the sit in every wash we came up to, and we didn't have that good of luck. And when we started actually looking around more, most of the cat tracks we found were on the top edge where they could see into the wash.
Right.
And yeah. Because of the...
Well, most of the time they do stay on the top edge. If I can get their attention, I'll try and get them down in there.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites is where a drop will come to a road. You got a drop coming into a road, that's always a good spot. Culvert pipes are like cat magnets. An abandoned building, the old farmhouse building. I do some trapping where the old Union Pacific Railroad used to run down, and they got these kind of trenches, like culvert pipe type things that cats, they just can't pass them up. They got to go through them. So I check for a lot of those.
Are you setting your cages inside the culverts?
No, I'll set them on a trail right on the other side.
Okay.
Normally, I don't want to get right on the culvert, but I mean, if I could snare, that's where I'd be putting my snares, but I don't do that. But I'll go maybe 20 yards down. Normally, with the cattle, what I've seen a lot of times with coyotes, normally they'll go check the culvert and then they'll cross the road. But a cat will go through it, a fox will go through it.
Well, if you were going to give any advice to someone like me that's going to be a greenhorn playing with cages this year, what would it be?
Well, I'll tell you, whatever you do, don't put any distractions on the outside of that cage and set the flat. Don't put your lure, don't put anything out trying to, set it up in a tree limb, trying to get where you think, okay, well, I'll put this long distance call way up on this tree so he can smell it better. Because you just made a distraction for that cat. Everything should be funneled in to the back of that set. Just like you have your sets in my cage traps look no different than your sets in Cat Collector. How you guide them sticks down and you guide over those traps, mine's the exact same way except I got wire walls and you're using sticks.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense to me. That really does.
And like I said, I don't know if anybody else uses the carpet, that stinky carpet. It works great for me. Guy that's Cajun, if you can find some tan, you know, tan colored carpet, you know, throw it on that part in that cage and gather up that stink. And that's, you know, the more natural cat odor that you can get in the back of that cage, the better off you are, because every Tom out there is territorial. And that new scent is a curiosity thing, and that just makes them want to go in there and check it even more. And if you're going to get a cage, don't get a cage that has a wire pan, and you want a big pan. I like cages with pan tension. Mercer's got ones now up there with pan tension. I don't know who else is making cages. I think there's a guy in Arizona that's making some cages out there. They look nice. I've never used them, but I'm into lightweight. I like the nesting style. Don't be afraid of those 8-inch cages, because they will work.
What do you, since you're talking, you have snow, do you have to do anything with the cage about freezing down or anything touching or using salt or anything?
Yes, you know, that's a good question. I learned that the hard way. I set cages out, and they got froze to the ground, and it took me forever to get them thawed out. But you can elevate your cage. You can set them on top of, you could get two sticks that'll go underneath the cage just to get it up off the ground. And then lay you some carpet. I use the carpet, but you could use wire string, some type of string that you could, it'll hold dirt, so keep it up off the ground, because them cats don't like walking on top of that wire. They want to put some type of stuff on the bottom of the cage. It don't have to be thick, just half inch, quarter inch, just enough to where they don't feel it on their feet.
Okay.
Make it natural.
And are you...
Keep it up off the ground, and you can cover the cage on the top. You can lay plastic over it. I just use limbs when I cut them out of the trees, like a juniper limb, and it keeps most of the snow off the cat. We got 24-hour cats here, so I get in there and I keep those cages as clean as I can.
And how are you... do you have a technique that you found out, I'm sure, using a catch pole for your cats? How are you doing that in the cage? Are you setting it up on its end, or...?
Well, what I do is I'll stand the cage up, open the door. Actually, I won't even open the door. I'll just slide it through and hook it. I'll never leave the cage, and then all that, whatever he does while he's going through what he's going through, it's all going to be in the back of that cage still.
Okay.
And I just reset. And then I just reset, go from there.
Well, the things about
and, you know, with cage trapping, and another thing about if you're new to cage trapping, one thing that you'll realize that you can't fake footholds, because a lot of places that you'll set for footholds, you can cage, you'll pass right up when you're on the foothold line, but with cages, you can set right out of town. You can set in spots where you would never in a million years set a foothold. And there's cats right out of town. And you'll find that out once you start caging. You right out of town, like where people just right out of view, maybe on the switchback of a highway or something where it's a good funnel point where a cat may cross, but you couldn't use a foothold there. You can set a cage there. And it opens up a lot of new trapping ground for you.
That's one of the things that really... I mean, what they were telling me, which, you know, even around here with the population we're starting to get around where I live out in the mountains of Tennessee, they're catching cages, or they're setting these cages for cats 10 feet off of the road in brush on these trails. When the door goes down, they're not having a burn circle. There's nothing really jumping. They've got stuff on the cage anyway, and people roll right past. If you were to stake a cat down right there, everybody's going to steal him first chance they get, but they never know the cages are there.
I set my cages right in the middle of chucker hunters that never know my cages are there. They're out there walking those hills. They got their bird dogs, and I'll have cats in cages. I'll have cats right off the side of the road. They'll never even know. They don't even know a trapper exists. and I don't have, you know, I've never had an issue with them, you know, because those cages, you can just tuck them in somewhere, and you don't have to catch circle like six, and it's just real low key, and, you know, it opens up so many different doors for you. And the remakes are so much easier. I mean, when I do my coyote line, I go up to Nevada, and I run a coyote line for about a month, and then I switch over to Cajun cast around, go right back into Nevada, and I start doing coyote line again. By the time I'm done by the end of the day of my coyote line, I'm giving out. With these cages, the remakes and everything, it's just a lot easier on you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds like a pain in the butt, and I understand that you can't put 150 cage traps in the back of your truck, but with these new straps, the way they got them now, where you can nest four up inside, I think a whole set of four maybe weighs 40 pounds, and you stand them on end, you can get a lot of cages in your truck, and it don't beat you to death. It's really nice, actually.
Well, I'm even thinking about trying some on the river, even though, you know, on a boat, space is so valuable, but I'm thinking about playing with some on the river just to see what happens this year.
Right. The only thing I've noticed, I never really get much, but the cat and fox, I know coons are tough on some cages. If they can get a hold of something, they'll tear it up. So that's the only thing I would have to keep in mind. You know, you might have to need a pretty tough cage for a coon. I really don't know because I don't even have any coon where I live. But I would imagine it wouldn't have a problem at all catching a beaver or something like that, you know, with a cage.
No, I don't either. Well, I've got one question before I let you go. I know it's getting late. When you have these solid pans you're talking about, are you putting duff on those pans, or are you leaving those exposed, or are you gluing something to it? What's your procedure on that pan?
On my pan, it's just got duff right over the top of it. Yeah, well, I like my pan covered with duff. I do like that. What I do is I actually lay my carpet right over a little bit and then put duff over it. But you always want that pan. You don't want them stepping on that plain steel. Another thing, before, when you are making your bed, make an indentation. Make underneath of your pan. Scratch that dirt out deeper, because if you're trapping in real cold weather, you'll get that permafrost. It'll come up out of the ground. And a lot of times, that stuff will come from the ground and connect to your pan, and something could step on it and not set it off. So you kind of want to make a little bed under there so that you don't get that frost heave coming up out of the ground and not letting your trap fire. And, you know, keep all your moving parts, Vaseline. I use Vaseline on my trigger pan. Guys are using tar wax. You can use that. I don't use it. I just use Vaseline, and it keeps, you know, the ground, the triggers and, all the moving components working. Now, you know, you get that frost and that condensation when it refreezes.
Well, that makes sense, yeah. Well, I appreciate it, and I'm sure I know this was educational to me. This is one I've been waiting the last few days since we talked and said we could set this up, because this is a very interesting topic to me, just because it's something new to me. Go ahead.
I honestly believe, Clint, any guys out there that are thinking about to start the cage trap, jump into it. It's great. It's a way to produce a lot of fur on your trap. Don't think that you can't do it, because I know everybody's real fond of them footholds, and I was too. And I hated the heck out of thinking about the hot wire traps, but I'll tell you, they've changed me. I'm a firm believer in putting up a lot of fur. You can put a lot of fur up with those cages.
Well, I saw that in Arizona. Well, I appreciate it a lot. And we may get you on here again to talk about this some more, because I'm sure I'll have some train wrecks and I'll need to talk to somebody.
Hey, no problem. I'll be glad to help. We'll talk to you later, Clint.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Well, to me, some of that stuff Charlie talked about, especially using the carpet, having your sets where if your wind's wrong and the cat gets behind, you're set, they lose interest, almost like a three-year-old kid with ADD. Something to keep in mind as you're out there trapping, on no matter how you're trapping for cats. But I do think with our society and the way things are going, cages are going to become more prominent in the way we trap, just because of population and everything else. So if you're always been dead set against it like I have, you might want to take a second look at some of that. Now, before we end up the show, I want to talk about just a little bit of lesson from the Teachers of the Night, the Raccoon DVD. There's a lot of stuff you can see in that DVD, but one of them that I found very interesting and very surprising to me, because I've done a lot of raccoon trapping and I've had this belief in my head that, you know, it doesn't really matter about scent at all with raccoons, and you'll catch plenty of coons no matter what your scent is. But, you know, if you're a raccoon trapper, you're a water trapper, you know, if you're going to be honest with yourself, at the end of the day, you absolutely reek of fish oil and anise and persimmon and all these different type of baits and molasses, and your truck smells like it, you smell like it. When you get around non-trappers, like going to the grocery store, you'll see everybody turn around and look at you, because you play basically just stink. Coon trapping on a high productive way is a messy, messy business, and you end up smelling like what you're doing, and that's the coon trapping. But one of the things from the video I found really amazing was when we were putting these traps out with the night vision footage, if I touched a tree, the coon would go up and smell that tree. Now, we weren't putting lure on the trees. If I reached down and I put my hand on the ground, that coon, like a hound dog, would go up and smell that. We're setting these traps barehanded because that's just the way that I've always set coon traps. Don't have to worry about scent with a coon, right? So I'm setting these traps, and the coon, when they came to the 220s or anything, they would always smell all the way around them. Even on some of the beaver sets, the coon would go off the bank. They would smell the trap. You know, we were playing with caster, with coon lures and stuff while we were making that video, and I'm sure some of that got on the trap just because of the nature of trapping. But if you ever get to see that or you've seen that, think about that. When I say, you know, I touch this and there he goes over and smells it, and I touch this and he goes over and smells it. So if they're keyed in on our scent, the way the video shows it, and the video has no agenda whatsoever, it's just showing you what the coon are doing later on in the night when they come around your sets, maybe we as trappers ought to think a little more clean if we're going to be running dry land sets like conibears or snares. And since that video come out, I've got countless emails and PMs and guys talking to me at conventions where, after watching that, they started being a lot more cleaner with their, especially their 220s. That's what most of these comments have been on. They've been a lot cleaner with their 220s. They treat them more like coyote traps. They're setting them with clean leather gloves to try to keep that over amount of scent on there. And they've said it's been amazing at the difference that they have. Now, am I saying that you've got to go out and be clean to catch coon? Absolutely not, because I've never been around a raccoon trapper that's been like that. But if you know there's more coon there than you're catching, it's something to keep in the back of your mind. So maybe if you keep your traps a little cleaner, you wear these gloves, it may get you another 10%, 20%, 30% coon. I don't know what it's going to be. But from talking to these other guys, and they had no reason to tell me any different, they could see a visible difference in their catch. So I wanted to share that with you just a little bit before we get out of here. Now, one thing that, you know, there's guys that always want to push themselves, you know, and God bless them. That's kind of the way I keep finding myself when I'm ever out setting traps. And I'm going to tell you a little story about myself that I've had some students and my wife's got pretty upset with when she saw this. But it'll work on you if you're wanting to really push yourself. We all get tired. We all get run down. We start finding reasons why we can cut out a little earlier. We all do it. I don't care what anybody says. Your brain starts going, okay, I want to go to the couch. I want to go get a hot shower, get some food, and go to bed. Everybody goes through that. And one of the things that I found for me personally that you can copy this is I used to take a 3x5 card and on that 3x5 card in the window of my truck, I would scotch tape that to where it'd be like where GPS is now. So it's not really in the middle of you, but you can't help but to notice it all the time. And on that 3x5 card, I'd write this little note to myself. And I had to see this every time I got in the truck. I had got out of the truck as I'm going down the road. No matter which way I turned, unless I wasn't going to look at the windshield, this little note was going to keep reminding me this little phrase I put on there. And I'm going to kind of change one of the words, but I think you'll get the gist. Is what I wrote on the first part of it was, "Are you a man?" And on the bottom part, it was, "Are you," and I'm going to say, "wussy" today. And every time I saw that, when I started getting tired, I had to consciously make the decision, was I a man or was I a wussy today? And I don't like even admitting that there's any wussiness about me, even when I'm by myself or how tired I get. But that's just one of those things, one of those little motivating things that anybody can do. You can put it on your boat, your truck, your four-wheeler, whatever it is, your skinning shed. If you find yourself running out of steam while you're skinning anything, put these little notes up so it's always being brought up to your conscious and your subconscious, and you'll have to make that decision. And if you're a real go-getter, you're not going to succumb to being weak when you're going to have to make that decision and admit yourself, okay, if I do this, I'm going to be a big wimp today. Just one of those things I used to do. May or may not want to. My wife may or may not like something like that, but it's just one of those things I used to do. Well, trapping season's on, guys, and I hope everybody's having a good time. I hope everybody's stacking up fur about 10 foot deep about now. Hope everything's prime and the fur prices keep holding out so everybody has a good sale. But it's time for us to go to work, so let's go trapping. Until next week, enjoy the woods and the swamps, man.